Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Horde, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth podcast, the Just Like Starting Over edition, as my broadcast partner Dave Lapham joins me to discuss the start of OTAs under new head coach Zach Taylor and a big change on the Bengals offensive line. OTA, by the way, stands for Organized Team Activities, which is a fancy NFL term for practice with no live contact and some other limitations. The Bengals are allowed to have 10 OTAs, which they will conduct over the next 3 weeks, with no weekend workouts permitted. Coming up on the pod, I'll get Lap's observations about the first OTA workout, including that big change up front, a few players that stood out, and assistant coaches that caught his eye. We'll also hear from Cordy Glenn, who did something he hadn't done in an estimated 10 years on Monday. And in this week's Fun Facts interview, I will talk to Bengals president Mike Brown about the position group that has probably cranked out more great players than any other in team history. All of that is straight ahead, but first, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. It's the greatest invention since foaling. In the interest of full disclosure, I haven't tried it yet, but foaling is a combination of football and bowling, where you throw a football to try to knock down your opponent's bowling pins before they knock down yours. A 30-lane foaling warehouse has opened in Cincinnati, and it includes a bar. I plan to give foaling a try very soon. Now let's get to football, as I bring in my broadcast partner Dave Lapham to discuss the Bengals' first OTA practice under Zach Taylor.
One OTA practice in the books, and Lap, I guess the closest thing to news on day one was how the offensive line lined up, the fact that Jonah Williams was at left tackle and Cordy Glenn moved inside to left guard. Now, Clint Bowling isn't practicing yet.
Right.
Alex Redmond isn't practicing yet, so these things can obviously still change. But what was your reaction to seeing that?
I wasn't really shocked by any stretch. You know, Cordy Glenn has played the guard position, although it was back in his college days. He mentioned that he might have done it a little bit at practice when he was at Buffalo, but never did play, get any game snaps at the guard position. And, you know, it's a different world. Basically, you know, at the tackle position, you're working in space, and you have to be real patient with your technique and sometimes with your hands, whereas inside at the guard position, everything's coming fast. You have to get your hands on people a lot faster. You have to make quicker decisions. You can't wait as long to decide what you're going to do, how you're going to attack with your technique at the guard position as you can, you know, at the tackle position. So they are different worlds, but I think Cordy Glenn, you know, has played in both worlds, and I think he's going to be able to adjust to playing in both worlds. But as you said, Dan, it's the first day of OTA, so there's miles to go before anybody rests, that's for sure. But with the 11th pick of the draft, it's not a surprise that Jonah Williams is lining up at the spot that he, you know, he played so well at Alabama, you know, only gave up one sack and, I don't know, 800 and something snaps, I think, pass sets it was, at the left tackle position. So he's pretty impressive with his technique out there. He's got great feet. He's quick. He's got great hand placement. I think he can play the left tackle position, and I think they want to give him the first crack at it out there.
It sounded like Cordy Glenn appreciated the way new offensive line coach Jim Turner handled it. He pulled him aside. It sounded like it was a few weeks ago and more or less let him know that this might be the way that things were going to go, at least in OTAs.
I think that's a wise thing to do. I think that it, you know, it wouldn't be real fair to just throw it out there as a surprise on you know, that morning you go to meetings and it's like, yeah, here's where you're going to be playing now, as opposed to you're preparing your mind and your mindset for maybe something else. So I think that's smart, that's wise. I think that shows that Jim Turner is all about communicating with his players, which is good. And, you know, I'm impressed with watching him work with his offensive line. He gets a lot of reps. He comes from the Frank Pollock school. There's no standing around killing grass. I mean, these guys go through a ton of reps no matter what they're doing. If they're in cone drills, if they're on sleds, if they're, you know, working against each other, there's a maximum number of opportunity for every single guy in a short period of time. And the thing I like about him with his technique, the linemen's feet are always moving. They're always chop-stepping. You know, they're not taking big plodding, you know, steps and anchoring like, you know, Andre the Giant. I mean, they got the quick jackhammer feet, and I like that in their technique, and I do like what they're doing with their hands. I think there's a lot of similarities between what Frank Pollock and what Jim's doing as this offensive line coach with this group.
Looking at the rest of the line, Billy Price was at center. John Miller, the free agent they picked up from Buffalo, was at right guard. Bobby Hart was at right tackle. Billy Price looks good to me. He looks fit. He looks strong. He looks confident after getting through an injury-plagued rookie year.
Yeah, I think it was kind of a nightmare, you know, probably starting with the combine. He'd really never been hurt and you know, messes his pec up at the combine and the bench press testing. And so, you know, that was like, wow, that's out of left field. That's kind of a rarity. And, you know, he comes back from that, and then he has the almost like a Liz Frank-type injury with that foot that is not a real comfortable thing to deal with. So literally and figuratively never was able to get his feet under him, you know. And now that he has, the good thing is he went through all the mental reps the entire season. Even when he had the pec problem from the combine, he was taking all the mental reps out there in OTAs and mandatory mini camps and then training camp. And so he did see it. He did experience all the meetings. There's something to be said for that. And he got out in the field and played. So he experienced the tempo of the National Football League and the differences that you have to make adjustments to coming from the college level. So his improvement from year one to year two, we always talk about it. It's always big for every rookie. For him, I think it's going to be astronomical. Because, you know, he was doing it wounded, you know, last year a couple of different times.
If guys are healthy, there really aren't a ton of starting jobs open on the roster, but one is at defensive end where Michael Johnson isn't around anymore. Sam Hubbard was in there with the ones to begin the first reps of OTAs on Monday. Kerry Wynn rotated into that spot quite a bit as well.
Yeah, I'm impressed with both of them. I think they're both athletic. Sam Hubbard and Kerry Wynn are going to give the Bengals a lot of snaps, I think good snaps off that edge. Kerry Wynn reminded me of Eddie Edwards out there a little bit, a long-armed, long-bodied type defensive lineman that has, you know, enough body strength he can lock you out with those long arms in the running game, set an edge a little bit, as well as pass rush. And Sam Hubbard, we saw everything about Sam you love, his athleticism, his effort, and Wynn's that kind of guy too. They're big hustle guys. I mean, they don't waste – you never see them walking anywhere. You never see them bringing up the rear in any drill. They're always in the forefront of everything, and they're always, first guy at the line if they're going to run sprints. Those are the type of guys you like to have, and I think that's going to be a pretty good 1-2 punch over there at that position for sure.
As for Vontaze Burfict, spotted linebacker, the Bengals actually came out in nickel. So Preston Brown and Nick Vigil out there at linebacker, and B.W. Webb was in there as the extra defensive back. When they did get three linebackers on the field, the first one out there was Jordan Evans in that third spot.
Right, and that makes sense. You know, at this point, you have a rookie linebacker hasn't signed a contract yet. How much do you want to expose him potentially? So, and that being Pratt, of course, at the linebacker position. But I was impressed with Webb. I thought Webb made plays at that spot in the nickel. Obviously, Lou is very familiar with him, coached him with the New York Giants, brought him here for a reason, and he showed up. I mean, he made some plays. I thought that overall the tempo of practice, everything was very, very crisp. Guys were excited. There was a lot of enthusiasm. You can talk about that kind of stuff. You can talk about excitement in the room, enthusiasm. Will it carry to the field? It did. It carried from the classroom to the field. And it wasn't false. You know, there was nothing false about it. Defensive players, you know, when one room would go off the field, another one came on, it was a sprint. It was like NASCAR. It was like making a pit stop. I mean, they were flying by each other, getting on and off the football field. That's the kind of thing, you know, you like to see. I thought, as is the case, a lot of times, Dan, defense might have outplayed the offense in the very first skirmish as such when they go 11-on-11. And I think the offense will, you know, obviously their graph will start going up very quickly. Zach made reference to the point that there were turnovers, but they were self-inflicted. The ball was on the ground too much in terms of just simple handoffs and those kind of things. Defensively, would like to see more turnovers, more takeaways forced by the defense, but the offense was way too charitable, and so they have to tighten that part of it up. Ball security is a big deal, but I thought that the tempo of practice overall, to and from drills, on and off the football field, on the field as they're running plays against each other. I thought all of that was very, very high level. The execution, not where you want it yet, but it's only day one.
One offensive guy who did make plays was the second-round draft pick tight end out of Washington, Drew Sample. He had several catches, including a deep ball down the seam.
He did. He looked very good, you know, and, you know, he's down the middle against, you know, it's not chopped liver out there. It's against Jesse Bates, who, you know, that's the last two second-round picks, back-to-back years going after each other. And Jesse Bates had a very, very strong rookie season. So, you know, it's good to see Sample making those plays. And I thought he was a very easy catch of the football. He didn't struggle. I mean, it wasn't like he was, you know, working to catch the football. It was very, very simple. You know, it was like suction cups, man. Flicked those hands out there and a very, very easy catch of the football, which I think was a really good sign. And he ran good routes. And, you know, that's the thing. The other thing that I was impressed with, young guys, veteran guys, it's new systems on both sides of the football. I didn't see a ton of mental errors. I didn't see mental breakdowns. I saw physical breakdowns, and that's correctable. The mental errors are correctable also, but those are discouraging. You know, if you spend time in the classroom, you expect guys to understand installation. The fact that they're retaining what the coaches are putting out there, I think is a real good sign, because I didn't see any jailbreaks, any mental errors out there. Again, physical mistakes, and they happened, and they'll hopefully get better.
The bulk of the OTA practice was spent in individual position drills. You spent a lot of time watching Jim Turner work the offensive line, and we talked about the way he's going about that a little bit. Did any of the other assistant coaches, new assistant coaches, catch your eye?
Yeah, I think a lot of them. You know, I think every single position group that I looked at, the players, you can tell when players are responding to coaches or if they're just kind of like, you know, let me just get through this drill. And all of them are, you know, their eyes are on them, their ears are open. I mean, they're definitely paying full attention. You don't see guys, you know, looking at the ground, kicking dirt, trying to, you know, kill daisies or whatever. You don't see any of that going on. Guys are you know, attention front and center. And I think that's a good indicator that the coaches have already gotten the respect of the players. And we talked about all the players that we talk in the locker room with, Dan. They all talk about the youthful enthusiasm and excitement that the coaches are bringing to the classroom. They're bringing it to the football field as well, and players are responding to that. And they're buying what the coaches are selling. The coaches are good teachers, and the players are learning from these teachers, which is good. The attention paid to detail, I think, is very, very good. And I'm really impressed with all the coaches up and down, all position groups. They seem to have, you know, the players, not in the palm of their hand as such, but, you know, they have full control and full attention of all their players.
How about defensive line coach Nick Eason in particular? That's a group that has a lot of talent but didn't dominate last year.
And he's almost, I think they look at him as a veteran contemporary. I mean, he gets after him. He challenges them physically, mentally. I mean, he wants effort now, and if you're not giving him effort, he's not bashful, and he doesn't care who you are. He doesn't care if you're a multiple-time Pro Bowler or a college free agent. He's treating you the same way. It's like, man, you got to show me more than that. You got to hustle. You know, you don't have to be a great player to hustle, and I want hustle out of everybody, up and down the entire defensive line roster, and he's demanding it, and I think the players that I talk to in that position group say he's a no-nonsense guy, and he'll challenge anybody. And he's challenged the leaders of that position group very early on to make sure that everybody knows that he's not going to play any favorites in that regard, and he expects the same out of everybody. And I think he's going to get big effort out of the defensive front. I think it's going to be interesting to watch how the season progresses with those guys. I think there's going to be some internal competition there. That's never a problem. It's always healthy. And I think guys are going to push, you know, their fellow teammates to bigger heights, and it's going to be led by their coach. I mean, he's going to get after it. He'll go and two-gap all of them. I mean, he's a big, strong guy. And I think they respect the fact that he played in the league for a long time. And I think that part of his resume they're very respectful of. And he knows what he speaks. I mean, he's got those guys watching their hands. He's got them working their hands extremely well every single day. And that's what it boils down to. It boils down to footwork and hands and who's better in those areas. And you can never work on those enough. And he knows that. He understands it. To be able to play in the league, you have to have both. You have to have good feet and excellent hands.
This comes as no surprise, but it certainly looks like Andy Dalton is already grasping exactly what Zach Taylor wants to do.
I agree with you, Dan. I mean, Andy's as smart a football player, I think, as there is. You know, obviously Tom Brady is the leader of the pack in that regard with his six Super Bowls. But he has had continuity, you know, with his coaching staff, his same head coach the entire career for Tom Brady. And a good part of it with Josh McDaniel, you know, I mean, other than when he left to go to Denver for a little bit of time. He's had the same coordinator, so that part of it is good for Tom Brady. This will be Andy Dalton's third different offensive installation in 3 years, and it's not like he's a rookie. I mean, he's been in the league for more than a handful of seasons, so but he can comprehend it. I mean, he can grasp it. He can unlearn and relearn as fast as anybody I've seen, and I really like the offense too. I mean, the quarterbacks are out of pocket as much as they're in pocket. There's a lot of movement going on with this offense, a lot of a lot of jet sweeps, a lot of fake jet sweeps, and then play action pass around that. Sometimes quarterback stays in the pocket, sometimes they're out of pocket, sometimes they're, you know, an unprotected quarterback on a naked bootleg, other times they have people in front of them as blockers. I mean, it's you're going to see a lot of different things as a defensive football team from this offense. And again, Zach wasn't totally excited about the overall execution of the offense in the first day. But everybody knows it's going to get a lot better.
We mentioned B.W. Webb and Sample as a couple of guys that seem to have good days. Anybody else catch your eye, particularly somebody that maybe is a little bit off the radar?
Well, this guy's not off the radar, but I was watching Jonah quite a bit at left tackle, and you know, he's solid. He's solid as a rock. I mean, he's a sound technician. He's almost like a robo tackle out there, you know, watching him. Again, it's underwear ball, so you can't really, you know, get that excited about it yet. Cordy Glenn, I thought, you know, adjusted well inside. It is going to be interesting. Those two guys working together, if that's the way it's going to be, is going to be very interesting in terms of picking up all the stunts and twists and all the calls that have to be made and everything that goes along with it. I thought Cordy was playing a little bit high, you know, at the guard position. Going to have to maybe work on that pad level a little bit. But I think we've hit, you know, some of the guys, though, that you'd expect to catch your eye. Giovanni Bernard still catches, you know, he to me, he's got that quickness, that burst, that lateral quickness that he has is fun to watch. You know, we got to remember, Joe Mixon wasn't out there. A.J. Green wasn't out there. You got, you know, big-time players that weren't part of the action out there. So I thought some of the defensive linemen Really, I thought defensively, a lot of guys flashed. A lot of players flashed. We talked about, you know, quite a few of them. And again, I thought B.W. Webb, you know, flashed pretty well. I thought the defense was aggressive. I thought there was a heavy blitz mentality to what they're doing. I think they're going to get after people. I think offensively and defensively, I think it's all about attack. You know, it's about aggressiveness. And I thought a lot of players have shown in versatility that they were hoping, the coaches were hoping that they had. You know, sometimes you have to morph and mutate into something different. You know, Cordy's going to go through that, and other guys are going to do it. But I think the football IQ with players that have to have football IQ is there. I think leadership is there. We talked about all the captains they drafted, talked about leaders that are already on this football team. And, you know, everybody's undefeated right now. Everybody's optimistic right now, but it was a good start. They're far from the finished product. They got a lot of polish to put on to be a finished product, but I think it was a good start.
It's kind of strange not to see Marvin Lewis standing back there in the secondary with his practice itinerary in his hand following things.
I know. It's 16 years of it being that way, and Zach's just the total opposite. Marvin, on defensive orientation, liked to get back there as a deep, deep safety and observe everything. Now Zach, with the offensive orientation, he's right behind the huddle because he's calling the plays. I mean, he's right there. He's, you know, he's got the walkie-talkie, you know, with the calls going right to the quarterbacks' headsets in their helmets. So it's a much different dynamic out there. You're right, Dan.
Is the cafeteria open? I'm kind of hungry.
Let's pound some grub. nothing wrong with a good lunch.
Thanks, Lap. Following practice on Monday, reporters crowded around the locker of offensive lineman Cordy Glenn to get his thoughts on lining up at guard after strictly playing tackle in his first seven NFL seasons.
I mean, I played it before, but I mean, obviously when we drafted Jonah, you know, it's going to be different, especially with that type of investment. So you got to do whatever to help out the team. Honestly, that's what it comes down to.
You may have already answered this. When's the last time you played guard?
Probably like 10 years ago.
10 years ago?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you never played it in the NFL, even in preseason games or anything? Never played
the guard? Maybe a practice or two. Like, I might have tried it out. But no, I haven't, no preseason, nothing.
You think it's easier to go outside, inside, rather than inside, outside, if you haven't done either before?
I don't know.
They're totally different animals.
Yeah, it's different. I'm not sure. I don't know how to answer that one.
Cody, it's first day of OTAs, long way from the season opener, but do you figure I am probably a starting guard this year?
I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, the first thing for it to work would have to be you embracing it, really. I mean, are you wide open-minded to the possibility of doing it?
Yeah, definitely. I don't know. I mean, I'm out there right now practicing. I've been out there, you know, since they told me, doing everything, preparing for it. So, yeah.
You just kind of look at it as that's being a pro?
Yeah, it's doing your job.
Coach Turner give you the sense that you'll still be getting some time at tackle and he's just going to kind of, like, try to figure out what works best?
I'm not sure, man. I have no idea. We just had our conversation, whatever, and that was it. I don't know.
Did you like the way he handled it? You mentioned it's kind of a man-to-man conversation.
Yeah, it wasn't like he came in there and it just, like, oh, we was out on the practice field and it's like, oh, we'll go do this. I mean, we had a meeting about it, and, I mean, that's all you can ask for, really.
As I mentioned in my conversation with Dave Lapham, last year's starting guards, Clint Bowling and Alex Redmond, are not practicing right now as they recover from injuries, so we are still a long way from knowing if Cordy Glenn will move to guard this season. Now time for this week's Fun Facts interview and another visit with Bengals president Mike Brown as I get his thoughts on the best wide receivers in franchise history. If you had to choose a position where the Bengals have had the most great players at any given position, it might be wide receiver. And today we're going to look back at some of the all-time best in franchise history with team president Mike Brown. Let's start with Isaac Curtis, who averaged 17 yards per catch during his 11 years with the Bengals. When you think of Isaac, what stands out?
Well, Isaac was probably the pick of the litter. He was a great player here. He had intense speed. He was the fastest, I'm sure, of any wide receiver we ever had. He had wonderful hands. But he played in an era when defense was allowed to bump and hold up the wide receiver. They could keep their hands on the wide receiver all the way downfield. And that made it much tougher to throw the ball during that era. If Isaac had played in today's era, I wonder how anyone would have stopped him. But he was a great player, a good person, and if I had starting all-time Bengals team, he'd be on it.
Mike, a key player on your first Super Bowl team was a gangly rookie wide receiver from the University of Florida named Chris Collinsworth.
Yeah, Chris... I have lots of memories of Chris, and they date back to when he paraded across the stage at the Combine. In those days, the Combine was more primitive. There were actually two of them. The league had one group of teams in one Combine and another group of teams in a different Combine. But we were down there watching Chris at the Tampa Bay Bucks complex, and he walked out, and the group of scouts, much smaller in those days, but just one small room, but they all began to laugh because Chris looked like a drowned rat. He was 6'5 and about 185, if that, and he instead of being offended, laughed back, which made an impression. He didn't care what you thought. And then when we got him here for the first time, you knew immediately that he was a special player because he was not only tall, he was quick out of the break. And you could see that right away. He'd get separation. And, of course, he was a very smart player. When you put those things together, you had a Pro Bowl player, and that's what he was for us.
Do you enjoy listening to him as a broadcaster?
Some of the time. No, he's a good brother. He's very, very talented, and he has a quick mind. You can see it, and he's got a good sense of humor. He's insightful in surprising ways at times. He's the top of the group there. He's just has proven that to everybody.
We're looking at some of the great wide receivers in franchise history with Mike Brown. Your second Super Bowl team had Collinsworth on one side and the 1985 Rookie of the Year, Eddie Brown, on the other. In that season, 1988, he averaged 24 yards per catch. It's still a record for a player that had 50 or more receptions.
Eddie was extremely fast, quick. He was really hugely gifted. The thing that came along to make it hard on him was he had what was called gamekeeper's thumbs. His hands were injured in such a way that he lost the strength of his grip. If a ball hit his hands, his thumb would give way backwards. And it actually hit both hands. If you judged him healthy, he would have been right up there with Isaac. The thing he had was extreme quickness. He was one of those guys, I use the phrase, jump frame. And that dates back to the old movie days where you had frame upon frame in a film. And with him, you would see him in one frame, and then you'd see him all of a sudden a couple yards away. How'd he get there? Well, he was that quick. He got it done.
The franchise record for touchdowns scored in a season belongs to a wide receiver with, shall we say, a prickly personality, Carl Pickens.
Carl was a great athlete. He could jump out of the room. He was a high jumper. I think he could clear 7 feet in a high jump. Our attack with him was just to throw the ball in his general direction, and he'd come up with it. He could get above the other guys. We came up with that blooper ball, and we'd throw it way downfield. You don't see it today, but our deep pass was truly 65 yards downfield, and these other guys, the defensive backs for the other teams, would get lost underneath it, and Carl had a marvelous way of knowing where the ball was and judging his position to catch it. He made a lot of great plays for us.
The all-time franchise record holder for receptions, yards, and touchdowns is Chad Johnson. What is his Bengals legacy?
Well, Chad was unusual. He got separation, and Carson and he, in their days here when they were both functioning at their best, were unstoppable. Chad would go down on that 17-18 yard in break, and Carson would put that ball into him, and then all hell would break loose. People would be running into each other. Chad would be threatening to run right through it all. Was a terrific combination for us. Chad brought with him his propensity for showmanship, and at times even I laughed.
You took Chad in the second round of the 2001 draft, and then in the seventh round you made one of the great late draft picks in franchise history in T.J. Houshmandzadeh.
Yeah, T.J. was a smart receiver. He thought he was fast, and I guess that was enough. He was fast because he never lacked for confidence about what he was going to do or where he was going to be. He and Chad were a terrific combination, and I would put TJ in the extra smart department as well. He knew what he was about. Everything was thought out with him.
They were a great duo, and especially hard to stop when paired with the late, great Chris Henry.
Well, Chris could run, and he had a long reach. Radius, the catching radius, was extraordinary. But if he caught up to you, if you were a defensive back and he got alongside of you, it was all over. He'd just run away. And when we had him as part of the mix, part of the combination we had on the field, it scared the other team. They had to accommodate for him because they didn't want a pass going over their heads. They didn't want a quick score. That opened things for everybody else. So that was what he brought to the mix.
That takes us to the present day and A.J. Green. At this point, do you put him up there with Isaac Curtis on the list of the franchise's all-time best wide receivers?
If I had a starting all-time Bengals team, he'd be on it. He brings a different package. He's fast, but not as fast as Isaac. He's quick, but not as quick as Chad. He has a tremendous catching radius and a very competitive spirit. You feel really secure with him on one side. They have to overplay him. They know if they don't, they're in trouble. And yes, you're right when you say we've had a number of top wideouts over the years. I think probably that is a position where we've had more than our share of great players.
I always enjoy this. Thanks for the time.
Good to visit.
And that's going to do it for this week's podcast. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. And if you have a couple of minutes, give it a rating or leave a comment. Your feedback's great, and 5-star ratings help more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard, and thank you for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.